100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by Dan Gates, Executive Director of Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management. We discuss the organization's mission to defend the North American model of wildlife conservation and responsible wildlife management. Dan addresses the initiatives to ban the hunting of bobcats and mountain lions and the potential impact on out-of-state hunters. He emphasized the importance of uniting his sportsmen and women and educating the general public about the benefits of hunting. We have an opportunity to protect what we love, and Dan shares what you can do to help. I think this is a really, really important conversation, again, talking about these specific issues at hand. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming from Adam Wayland out of Pennsylvania. Adam wrote in the past 11 years, I've killed 10 bucks all on public ground, 3 with a rifle and 7 with the bow. The past 2 archery seasons have been a grind, and it took me till the last day of the season to kill a buck 2 years in a row. The 2023 PA archery season was a complete flip. I hunted opening morning and didn't see a deer, so I decided to go do some scouting and check cameras I hadn't checked since the beginning of September. I ended up having a solid buck near 2 different scrapes, 800 yards apart, a half dozen times through September. That evening, I hunted 23 yards from the one scrape and only saw 3 doe and a spike, and they used a trail 38 yards from the scrape that I never knew was there. October 7th was the next time I could hunt, and the weather was saying 52 degrees with a 4-mile-per-hour northwest wind and rain showers ending around daylight. My thoughts were that after the rain, the bucks might be up moving, freshening up the scrapes. So that morning, I snuck right back into the same rock oak tree I hunted opening evening. With the northwest wind, I was set up downwind of the scrape and was expecting to come up from in front of me, but that didn't happen. Everything was so quiet and calm that morning, and around 8 a.m., I peeked over my right shoulder and saw a big-bodied deer standing at 20 yards on the same trail the deer were on opening evening. I caught a glimpse of antlers and instantly knew he was a shooter with how big his body was. I grabbed my bow, turned on my Tacticam recorder as I was spinning around. The buck was eating acorns, so I hurried up and drew back while I wasn't paying attention. He started walking up the trail, and at this point he was 15 yards, and I stopped him in the first opening I had. His front leg was pulled back, so I hugged the shoulder, still aiming in the vital V. I squeezed off a perfect shot, letting the Annihilator 125 XL broadhead do the rest. The shot entered 1 inch beside the shoulder bone and exited 1 inch above the knuckle on the opposite leg. As he was running away, I was in shock because I finally saw how big he was and was easily going to be my biggest buck to date. He ran 200 yards and was dead within 20 seconds. Did my first pack out, and I carried 85 pounds out, and my uncle carried out 25 pounds. He ended up scoring 123 3/8 inches. This season was a true blessing, and even though it was short, I learned a lot. Watching and listening to the East Meets West Outdoors videos and this podcast has helped me put some new tactics to work, and it paid off. Well, congratulations, Adam. That is awesome. I love the photo. I love both the photos that you sent me, but especially the one with you packing them out there. Super cool. Early season mountain buck is really difficult to be able to do. And another huge congratulations there. If you want to send in your Mountain Buck Monday story, then send it over to my email, bow@eastmeetswesthunt.com, and just put Mountain Buck Monday in the subject line. If you want to see the photos of Adam's buck and the other Mountain Buck Monday bucks, head over to my Instagram, East Meets West Hunt, or Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors to check them out. In other news this week, I don't have a whole lot to update on. I'm recording this ahead of time, but I would have been at the Great American Outdoor Show with Maven on Saturday and Sunday, and Spartan Forge booth on Monday there. So I always have a great time at that show, so I'm sure it would be great. And in a couple weeks here, I'm going to Western Hunt Expo. I'll be out there in Salt Lake with Maven again as well. So that'll be fun if you're going to be out in Salt Lake. Then hope that I get to run into you, stop by and say hello. And other than that, make sure that if you are interested in checking out the Mountain Buck Scouting Camp, I believe I have a few openings left in the general admission spot. So if you want to come out March 23rd and 24th, you can head over to eastmeetswesthunt.com/scouting camp and find more information there. And lastly, I just appreciate everybody listening. And if you like this podcast, you find it beneficial, you learn something, I really appreciate it if you share it with your friends, your family, and give it a rating and review. But with that said, I hope that you have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, we're good to go. Dan Gates, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate you coming on.
Appreciate the opportunity, Bo. Look forward to kind of getting into the weeds on some of these issues and maybe trying to educate some of the general public and your followers.
Yeah, no. So Dan is from the Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management. And, you know, Dan, I will admit that up until about a month ago when we started talking and was introduced, I hadn't really heard of your organization and some of the stuff you were doing. But right away when I had heard about it and everything that was going on in Colorado and really across the country, I really, you know, stuck to it there. And I was glad that Sloan had put us in contact with each other, because I really love what you're doing and hate that what you're doing at the same time, because it's not a fun thing to be dealing with, but I'm glad that you're out there. So if you wouldn't mind kind of telling the listeners to get started here a little bit about yourself and kind of what you have going on.
So first and foremost, currently, and have been for the last 6 years since we started the organization, I'm the executive director for the Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management, like what you had mentioned. The mission of that organization is to enhance, promote, and defend the North American model of wildlife conservation and responsible wildlife management. And so that kind of falls into the scope of about 99.9% of all the conservation hook and bullet organizations that we have. I'm also the president for the Colorado Trappers and Predator Hunters Association, and I sit on a plethora of different boards and committees around the country, none the least of the Fur Takers of America and the National Trappers Association. And I'm also the vice chair of the Colorado Wildlife Conservation Project, which we started 2 years ago, which is a collective group of about 25 different national, regional, and statewide organizations that are trying to form a coalition, a broad-based coalition. Now, we don't always agree on everything. There's not any food throwing or any fist punching, but we don't always agree on everything. But we know that we're on the same side and that we are not each other's enemies. The enemies in Colorado are at the governor's office and all the people that follow suit with those wishes, wants, and desires of animal extremism.
Yeah, and so I guess first and foremost with that, how did you get into that and become so passionate into having these roles and doing it? So what's kind of your background and were you a lifelong Coloradan?
Actually, I moved into Colorado in 1974 as a young kid. I started working in a taxidermy shop immediately thereafter, sweeping floors and cleaning up guts and learning the taxidermy and the fur buying trade. So I grew up around sportsmen and women, hunting guides and Western artists and taxidermists and game wardens and the real game wardens. I mean, we got some real game wardens left, but there's a lot of wildlife management stuff that's not as old school as what it used to be. There's not as much boots on the ground experience. There's not as much historical tradition. And so I grew up around that side of things, took a liking to it. Those guys kind of took me underneath their wing. And I started working for outfitters and hunting guides at an early age as a wrangler. And I just kind of took it under what I was going to do for the rest of my life in some capacity. 37 years ago, I started a wildlife control business, which we still operate today, my son and I. He picks up most of the slack at this point in time. I still work it a lot, but this politics stuff is a full-time job. And it's gotten to the point where it takes away from our ability as a business. But we're very established on the landscape. And while people think about wildlife control, they might think about skunks in somebody's garden or squirrels in somebody's attic. We've actually taken it to another level with utility companies and power plants and conservation easement properties and agriculture and production, industrial, and a variety of things. And it's a human wildlife conflict resolution business now more than a wildlife control business like when we first started it. But it got me into the nuts and bolts, the grassroots, the sausage making of wildlife management, and seeing, because I was dealing with a customer, I was dealing with a person that had a conflict. I was dealing with a person that needed to be educated. And I started playing at this level about 2007, 2008. I was doing it a little bit, but not to the degree I am now. In 2011, the current governor at that time, Governor John Hickenlooper, merged the Colorado Division of Wildlife with Colorado Parks, and now it's Colorado Parks and Wildlife. And so the mentality started to change significantly back there, and you know, just demographically for one, but administratively as for another. Governor Hickenlooper sat in office for 8 years. I was actually appointed by him to sit on the Habitat Stamp Committee, And that's a conservation easement coalition of like-minded individuals that is statutorily regulated. It's governor appointed and the Senate confirmed. And I was appointed by him. And then when he left office and the current existing governor took office, Governor Jared Polis, I was subsequently reappointed by Jared Polis. And I did not vote for either one of those. I want to make that clean and clean as day. John Hickenlooper was a moderate. Jared Polis and his spouse, Marlon Reese, are not moderates. And there's a level of animal activist extremism there. And we thought that there was a pretty good opportunity that we would not have a moderate legislature or a democratic, you know, process that we could deal in regularly if we didn't formulate a group. So back in 2017, we formulated, a buddy of mine and myself formulated, the Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management. And we did so, I mean, hindsight's 2020, but we did so at a very good time, because about the time that Governor Polis took office in 2018, things started to change, and they started to change not for the betterment of agriculture, domestic livestock production, wildlife conservation and resources, and they've gone significantly downhill. Now, we've held the line at multiple levels, and we've won some things and kept the wolves at bay, no pun intended. But that, if we didn't formulate CRWM at that point in time, I would be fearful of where we would have been in 2019, 20, 21, and 22, where we beat multiple measures at the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission and at the Colorado State Legislature to deal with the same things that we're dealing with today. And we ran some legislation and we didn't get necessarily everything that we wanted, but we've not lost at all. And we continue to, you know, trudge forward, build a coalition, build an alliance, build a war chest, and have a plan of action and a strategy. And now that we've been so successful on the landscape, they decided to come back to us through the Colorado voters and dropped two initiatives on us back last year, both to ban the harvest of mountain lions, bobcats, and lynx. And while we've been fighting through that process since last September, I'm proud to say, as of yesterday, so you're the one of the first podcasts that knows about it. As of yesterday, they withdrew the second initiative, Initiative 101. And I can get into that if you'd like, but they're going with Initiative 91, the first initiative that was dropped, that we actually got the language changed on the title. So that's kind of a backdrop history of where I started, where I'm at, and where we're at today. And I know that today's conversation is going to be mostly around these particular initiatives in the Colorado landscape, but we're dealing with Initiative 91, and it's still a ban to harvest bobcats and mountain lions and lynx, even though they're state and federally protected. And so now we're just building up our armament, building up our playbook, and getting the pieces in place for the right positions. And we will be victorious this November with the help of the sportsmen and women community from around the country.
Well, yeah. And so explain a little bit. So Initiative 91, is you were saying that you changed the language in the title there. What did you specifically change? Wasn't it before prohibit trophy hunting? You're saying that wording has changed?
Yeah, so we actually got trophy hunting out of the title.
Oh.
And trophy hunting, we deemed as a catchphrase to mislead a smoke and mirrors campaign from the proponents of those measures, to mislead the general public that trophy hunting was legal. You know, their assumption or their illusion to the general public is that people went out there and cut the heads off of stuff or only salvaged stuff, you know, for supposed trophy parts. And they've acknowledged that through the arguments through the title board and the Supreme Court. They also acknowledged it with their second approach on Initiative 101. But we did get trophy hunting out of it. But people need to understand, Bo, if you look at the 4-page measure of Initiative 91, and you can find that on our website to where they don't have to go dig through the Secretary of State's website. They can find Initiative 91 on SaveTheHuntColorado.com. If they look at the measure, the only thing that we're allowed to address or attempt to change is the title of the measure. That's what's going to be on the ballot. The measure language will be in that blue book, that great big thick blue book that explains all of the ballot titles. So the title board, since it's called the title board, can only address the title. It has to have some specific requirements and criteria to be able to meet guidelines of what is allowed as far as a ballot measure. But we were successful through arguments to get trophy hunting out of it completely. So now it's a hunting ban. Well, it was a hunting ban before. It's just that they wanted to do their smoke and beers campaign and separate that out, even though it was still turn around and making sure that we didn't harvest anything bobcat or mountain lion wise.
Yeah. And it's when I was reading that, I was, when I read it, banned trophy hunting, and I started looking into it, I was like, this has nothing to do with trophy hunting. This is just hunting. Yep. And for the mountain lions and bobcats. And you know, it's, so one thing I want to address here before we get into that a little bit more. So a lot of the listeners of this podcast, a lot of them come from the Eastern states and the East Coast. And it's like, why should that matter? And I'll ask you that question, but I also want to bring up, and first and foremost, is a lot of the listeners here, although they live in Pennsylvania like myself and the other states throughout the East Coast and even into the Midwest, a lot of people go out west to hunt, and to hunt elk specifically, Colorado being one of the easiest places to be able to do so. That was my first place that I've ever went out west to hunt elk, and with the over-the-counter tags in Colorado. And all of this affects that, first of all, and to be able to think about. But this is much larger than just Colorado, and specifically in Colorado. It's much larger than that, and that's why it's just the picking of the at different things that the low hanging fruit, as they call it, with some of these things that people don't do as much as far as predator hunting and trapping and other things that you see in some of these different states. Is that correct from what you're hearing?
Yeah,
you want to expand on that a little bit?
The worst thing about what they've done is they've attempted to set, intentionally or otherwise, they intended on setting a precedent for the definition, the statutory definition of trophy hunting, which is not, to the best of our knowledge, you can't find a definition of trophy hunting in any state statute when it pertains to wildlife management and game and fish laws. What that would do, the way it's written, the definition of trophy hunting in the measure. Now, we can't get trophy hunting out of the measure. We just took it out of the title, as I explained. But the definition of trophy hunting means to intentionally kill, wound, pursue, stalk, or entrap a mountain lion or a bobcat. As soon as you set a precedent about what something means, and it, in this case, yes, it does pertain to mountain lions and bobcats, but it's not in statute now. If they define it in statute, they can turn around and go back and say, here's the precedent. Here's the precedent on wildlife management. Here's the precedent on trophy hunting. Their definition is what hunting is. If you look at game and fish laws around the country, hunting is defined as harvest or take, or maybe it's pursuit or whatever. That's hunting. But as soon as they start putting, you know, caveat catchphrases onto things like trophy hunting, it's easily acceptable for the general public, or maybe the legislature, or maybe the Parks and Wildlife Commission, or maybe another commission in some other state, to say, well, look, this is what they did. This is how they defined it. They're the first. They turned around and capitalized on making sure that everybody understood what trophy hunting was. So let's get rid of trophy hunting of bighorn sheep. Let's get rid of trophy hunting of moose. For that matter, let's get rid of trophy hunting for pheasants or turkey or deers or elk or whatever. Now, that's far-fetched to some people, but not when you start looking at legal definitions, not when you start looking at precedent-setting maneuvers and tactics and manipulation of the system. We are dealing with a hunting ban. I don't think any sportsman or woman in the country would be acceptable about a hunting ban of anything, unless there was some sort of management decision that was coming across that the science-based wildlife manager said, we shouldn't do this because there's a possible extirpation or the depletion of the resource or the population or whatever. But I tell you what, setting a precedent for what they're trying to accomplish, they're going after the low-hanging fruit, bobcats and mountain lions, which are two of the most highly regulated species on the planet when it comes to North American model conservation efforts. We have more bobcats and mountain lions in North America now than what we did in 1900, and it's done through a highly regulated process. The testing, the requirements, the tagging restrictions, the check-ins, and all of the stuff that go into that. There's more data and science-based management information on bobcats and mountain lions than anything. If they can turn around and take the low-hanging fruit that not everybody engages in, even though there's more data on that than anything, and they can incorporate and manipulate that wording about two of the most highly regulated animals into a trophy hunting component, why can't they just turn around and go to another species? And to that point, last, I think it was August or September, Tris Zornio with the Colorado Sun newspaper had a headline that said, "Why are bighorn sheep, Colorado state animal, why are bighorn sheep any different than mountain lions?" Now, this is before the Mountain Lion Initiative even came out. We fought and beat these guys back in 2019, 20, 21, and 22. This was their next measure, but they're already setting the tone. They're already setting the narrative, setting the place at the table about other species to get this ideology in people's minds about why are we trophy hunting our state animal? Why are we trophy hunting deer and elk? Why are we? It's not far-fetched when you look at the backside of what we've had to deal with in Colorado over the course of the last 15 or 20 years. And it's damn sure not far-fetched if you look at who is in charge and who is trying to play at this landscape, because they are putting the pieces in place for an onslaught that is beyond epic proportions based upon single catchphrase of trophy hunting versus hunting.
Yeah, and basically they're aiming to target those people that are either uneducated about hunting or anti-hunters specifically in a way of triggering their emotion and being able to sway that from being loud and a voter's perspective. Is that right?
Yeah, they're really good at misguiding what their intentions are to the general public. They're really good at capitalizing and convincing some people that they are animal welfare groups when they're actually animal rights extremist groups. They're terrorists. They're terrorizing the North American model of wildlife conservation. They're terrorizing science-based wildlife management. They're terrorizing the tradition and the heritage of what conservation efforts have been instilled in this country over the last 125 years. But the people that don't know, that middle of the road group, not the antis and not the pro hunters, that middle of the road, they need to be educated on definitions of trophy hunting or just hunting or management objectives or models or the North American model. They need to know that conservation minded individuals that buy licenses that support Pittman Robertson and Dingle Johnson and all the things that are on the landscape that we've done over the course of the last 125 years across this country and Canada, they need to know where the truths are and where the fallacies are. And the opposition is going to provide smoke and mirrors and lies and deceit through all of this. And even though we've got the facts, we got the data, we got the statistics, the average person who doesn't do one or the other, who doesn't dislike us, who likes us, the average person is not going to go look for that information themselves because it's not their wheelhouse. They have to be taught. They have to be educated. And sometimes they might have to be force-fed. We're hoping to be able to force feed them the truths, not the lies and the fallacies.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to ask as far as how do you, you know, from the way that the government is infiltrating and impacting and trying to put the smoke and mirrors out there, how do you infiltrate that with the truth to be able to get out to these people? Or is that, are they controlling that so much that it's really difficult to get in there? And you're just trying to fight it in legislative of giving the facts.
Well, a couple of the things that we have going for us is that we started early in the process. And I say early because we started this big process before this governor was elected. We had our own problems in Colorado prior to this, for sure. 1992, we lost bear hunting in the spring with the use of hounds and baits because of a similar measure that came about. That was, 35 years ago. 1996, we lost the utilization of most trapping devices, foothold devices, body gripping devices, cable restraints and snares. You can still use them with 30-day exemption permits on private property. The only trapping that we have on public property or private property for recreational avocational proponents is with cages. We can't use anything else but a cage trap for all species unless it's a 30-day exemption permit, like coyote damage on your calves or beaver damage on your irrigation pipes or something along that line. But we've had our own problems for the last 30 some odd years. Where we are at now, you look at 2020, We just recently introduced wolves. That was a ballot-driven measure, a voter initiative to introduce an endangered species, first time in the country. This governor decides he wants to do the first time of everything. And there's many things that he's been the first of, but we're trying to keep him from being the first of others. But 2020, they voted, they won. I say they won because I'm not necessarily against wolves on the landscape. I am against ballot box biology to decide how we're going to put wolves on the landscape. And when the game management agency can't do anything to manage them. And so the experts that we have in this agency, while I don't agree with everything that they've done, I will speak highly of them because they are the best opportunity for legitimate defense and recognizable management decisions that we have. I've said this on similar podcasts. I don't want the pool boy doing brain surgery. You know, I don't want the gas station attendant turning around and trying to fix my diesel truck, even though just because he pumps gas. I don't want animal activists or somebody who is non-knowing to the subject matter to make the decisions on our 961 species of wildlife and all of our natural resources in the state of Colorado. That should be left up to the science-based agencies that we have. And there's a public process, like the Parks and Wildlife Commission that I mentioned, that we can go through. And the scientists should be able to turn around and give that evidence. The problem is,
have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade Short Barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
Colorado Parks and Wildlife works at the pleasure of the state governor. The state governor has given specific directions that we have no position. You don't have a neutral position because that's a position. You don't have a pro position because that's a position. You don't have a con position because that's a position. So the experts that have all the data and the science and the facts and years of boots on the ground experience can promote if it's asked through the commission, which we've already gone through. But if the governor says you don't talk to the media, you don't talk to the public, you don't give that information, then the governor will oversee what message is created by our game management agency. So the facts will be withheld. That's why it's organizations like ours, the issues committee that we formulated, these other organizations and coalitions, it's up to us to be able to get that information. It's public information. It can be easily distributable. We can convey that message, but the agency itself is not going to be allowed to do that. And I think that most agencies and hunters and anglers in the country probably have a similar situation if they have a hostile governor or a hostile administration that is not about consumptive use and sound wildlife management. If they wanted them to talk about something, they would damn sure let them talk about it. If it had to do with their agenda, they would probably let them talk about it. But the things about science-based wildlife management, about the North American model, about hunters and anglers on the landscape, that's not favorable to this administration. Now, they might say what they've done for hunters and what they're trying to do. And they're not the ones who are running this ballot initiative. But there's a lot of connections behind the scenes and then connect the dots that all of these individuals that are involved are just there to make sure that we don't continue to do what we've been doing for the last 125 years. And the agency has skin in the game and they're not allowed to turn around and show their cards.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, if you think about it from someone that works in a factory and say you have someone that's in charge of engineering and they have some really good ideas and ways to be able to fix a certain problem. But if the plant manager doesn't agree with that, then there's nothing that they can do about it. And he can, you know, control what they are doing and what they're and really what the outcome of that is, because they're in charge of the, even though, you know, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife should be the ones that are in charge of it. They've got the people up here that have been infiltrated by those other groups that are in charge of it.
One thing that's interesting, Bo, and I don't know the statistics and specifics for every single state, but Colorado Parks and Wildlife has roughly 1,000 to 1,100 employees. They've got more legitimate science-based wildlife biologists employed, over 350 of them employed with degrees, with boots on the ground experience. They've got more biologists and scientists than most game agencies have total employees. This is the premier agency in the country that has become bastardized and belittled and admonished and shamed because their facts aren't good enough for political agendas. There needs to be a breaking point at some point in time, and I don't know how that's going to happen, but somebody has to be the tip of the spear to be able to try to relieve all that stuff, make sure that that information gets out. And if it's not going to be allowed to get out, then we as sportsmen and women in the state of Colorado, the Western United States, and the United States as a whole, we've taken donations in from 47 different states already to fight this one particular issue. People are starting to wake up and they see, for instance, like what you said, how many people hunt in Colorado? How many people strive to hunt in Colorado? How many people have hunted in Colorado? How many people know people in Colorado? How many people vacation in Colorado, ski in Colorado? This is not a Colorado issue. This is an issue that everybody in the Western United States ought to pay damn close attention to. And if you don't have big game species in the Eastern states, like what we do here, even though you might have white-tailed deer and bears and turkeys, if you don't have what we have, don't think that they're not coming to knock on your damn door, because they're going to come get what you have, whether we lose it or whether we don't. It's just that we're trying to be the roadblock. We're trying to be the sounding board, and we're trying to be the moat that somebody has to cross. And hopefully we are the alligators in that moat.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, even looking at myself and in the past, and the more that I've been involved in this stuff and in this industry, and my eyes have been open to this, but you know, I feel like most people get into this lane of, oh, you know, I'm a deer hunter, or I do this, I do that. And they don't care about anything else that's going on around them because this is what their focus is. That's what they're in front of. But I've heard you say it before, and I think it's a really good practice is that instead of saying you are a deer hunter, you're a bow hunter, you're a rifle hunter, you're this, that we are outdoors men and women versus, you know, because we are involved in everything and we need to protect all of those different things. And it's because when you start putting yourself in these segmented categories, then we're even smaller than the whole group is to begin with. And that doesn't help in those types of situations.
I said this before, and you know, just starting to get into Instagram and Facebook in the last 6 weeks, which is not my wheelhouse and not my forte, but it's a pretty easy way to get a message out, especially when you're trying to tell people we've got 10 months to blow the fire out of the dragon's mouth at the door. And we're just trying to make sure that everybody's fully aware and that they're on board with what we're trying to accomplish. But I'm a sportsman. I've said this before, and I'm a bow hunter. And I'm a trapper and a lion hunter and an upland bird hunter and an elk hunter. And I shoot air rifles and I shoot muzzleloaders and I shoot high-powered rifles and I like shotguns. But I'm a sportsman. They have segregated ourselves intentionally while we have segregated ourselves unintentionally. You know, what do? I'm a bow hunter. Really? I mean, you have a hunting license. But if we just classified ourselves as sportsmen and women, it would be harder to divide and conquer us because we would be all in one wheelhouse. If you look at the National Shooting Sports Foundation statistics, responsive management statistics out of Virginia, if you look at the things from Sportsman's Alliance, the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation, You look at all the money that's been generated over the course of the last 90 or 100 years through excise taxes and license fees and distributed funds and so forth. They go to sportsman issues, conservation issues, hunting and angling issues. That's everything that we all do. But we've got so many subsets of what we've got. And I use bow hunters as an example, not to put them out with the bathwater or bastardize them. But I got traditional archers. I got compound guys. I got recurve guys. I got longbow guys. I got crossbow guys. You know, not all of them are in the same circles. But what if they were just, you know, string and arrow guys? I mean, just in their own mind. They could have their own organizations and they could deal with their own stuff. But when it came time to go to the Capitol or came time to go to a commission meeting or came time to write a letter, all of them are on the same page. Let's get them all on the same page, not have reservations or curiosities about what somebody else's intentions are, because we have to figure out a way to stand together. You know, you go to like SHOT Show I just came from. I saw Sloan out there. It was a sheep show. I got guys going to SCI. Those are underneath the one roof for the common cause. They might be fighting for the same money, might be fighting for some same membership, or maybe for some same issues, same business. But try to go in there as an animal activist in that building, under that roof, and see how welcome they are. We're allowing them to come underneath our umbrella that we've got because we're not willing to stand and we haven't been organized enough collectively or individually. And the associations that we're all part of are fantastic, but they haven't done a great job of messaging to the general public. They've done a fantastic job of messaging to their memberships, and maybe that's even created some divisiveness from different memberships to other memberships. But the fact of the matter is, we're never going to get that anti on our side, ever. I'm convinced of that. 18 or 19% of the general population is never going to turn around and believe anything that we say. 18 or 19% of our population already believes what we say to some degree. We shouldn't divide and conquer ourselves, but it's that 50, 60, 70% that's in the middle. That's where we should be garnering support. We should be talking to them. That's the general public. We should let them know of the benefits of hunting and fishing and what we've done historically over the last, you know, century and a quarter. We don't have to talk to the antis. We might argue with those guys, but let's stop arguing amongst ourselves. Let's stop worrying about what somebody else is doing within our own tent. And I use this analogy a lot, Bo, that I don't have great family relations historically just because we're all spread out through the country. And we might have differences of opinions and political ideologies and backgrounds and stuff. But if we go to a family reunion and somebody wants to come in and screw with that family, even for somebody that I haven't talked to for the last 20 years, I'm going to step up for them. We need to figure out a way to do that collectively as sportsmen and women. Be underneath that tent, be underneath that umbrella and say, when you walk under the shadow of this, you're dealing with every single one of us. And if you can't do that, then you're not welcome here. I think that that's the biggest part that we have to figure out a way to deal with, because how do we advertise to the general public? How do we message and educate the general public when we can't even talk amongst ourselves going to a commission meeting or a legislative hearing? Because we're there pitted against each other because some idiot formed a bill or a citizen's petition, and we're there to speak our part, not collectively our part, but our individual or organization part. We should work that stuff out before we get into those meetings, and we would be a hell of a lot stronger on the landscape in the end.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, because, I mean, you see it. There's so much division inside of ourselves. But one thing, too, I actually talked about on last week's podcast with a buddy of mine was about even the way that we portray ourselves on, say, something like social media, like Instagram, like Facebook, where you are reaching people that are outside of the hunting community. And I'm not talking about the antis, more so as those middle 50, 60, 70%ers, and making sure that we're telling a good story on there. You know, it's different as far as how you would essentially talk, you know, the way I would talk to you and talk about, you know, hunting stories or showing you pictures or whatever is a little bit different than you should probably share that stuff and share it with the public. And it's not shying away from the hunting, but making sure we're showing it in a positive light, telling the story behind it, you know, showing those different things so that when people do read it or see it or see a picture and stuff, it doesn't instantly make them angry and not understand that the whole picture of it. And I think that's something that we can all do better at too, from as we are becoming, you know, more in the face of other people that don't see it, which can be a good thing if we use it in the right way.
I think it can be a great thing. And I think that just from what I've seen over the course of my life, which, you know, I'm 60 years old. So, I mean, it's I'm on the downside of things one way or another. I've got a lot to look forward to, but it's in shorter durations as opposed to trying to look 20, 30, 40 years down the road. We have an opportunity with what we're dealing with here in Colorado to set that pace, to set that tone and narrative, and to do it with levity and civility and a level of decorum. We can talk to legislators. We can talk to the general public. I know this for a fact, Bo, because I'm in people's houses with my control business. I'm educating the general public differently than what the average sportsman does, because I go there to tell them about wildlife and conservation and natural resources and management and sustainable populations and offtakes. And so the average person doesn't have that ability because nobody's inviting them into their house with their bow or their muzzleloader and say, come into my house and give me an education on wildlife. We show up in our placarded trucks and our shirts and we're saying, we're here to solve your problem. And then they start asking you questions about, well, what's this over here? And what am I doing with that? And why is it like this? You can explain the laws and rules and regulations. Now, can we hit enough people to change the vote on this? Likely not. But I've been doing this for 37 years, and I can tell you that the ignorance, not the stupidity, the ignorance of the general public has not improved substantially when it comes to wildlife and natural resources. We've got 1,000% more people on the landscape recreating and doing things that they normally wouldn't have done. A lot of it that maybe happened in the last 3 years or so because of COVID. But they're not astute. They're not privy to why they have what they have, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. They don't know how we got to where we're at. They don't know where wildlife and natural resource management came from, where it's at today, and where it needs to go in the future, or how we're going to get it there. They're not stupid. They're just ignorant. But once they become educated, I tell you, you know, even my dumbass has the ability to be able to educate people in a sound, reasonable, logical manner, because I'm dealing with something in their house or on their property or at their business and telling them, this is why you should wait. This is why you shouldn't. This is why you should do this. This is how you do things preventatively. This is how you look to the future. I think if people had the opportunity to engage with experts in the field regularly, I'm an expert in my field, but I'm not a scientist or a biologist. I'm not a wildlife technician. If the general public could talk to those people and listen to those people and be educated by those people, not one-on-one, maybe it's through news, maybe it's through messaging, outreach, and education, the general public would be much smarter about what is necessary for long-term sustainable management in perpetuity. But when you have administrative practices driving agendas to not let those experts talk to the general public, we're going to continue to have that ignorant general public that sometimes they might even get on the verge of stupidity, depending on how bad they've been told different things that have been wrong.
Yeah. And, you know, like your example about going into the houses and talking to people, you know, I've had experiences where, say, I can think of one specific example. I was in Kansas City, Missouri, and I was around a group of people that didn't know anything about hunting. And they asked me where I was, what I was doing, what I was going. I said, well, I'm leaving here and I'm going bear hunting in Montana. And they're like, what? They're like, oh, bear hunting. And they started asking a bunch of questions and I explained it. And, oh, do you take the meat or do you just take the heads? You know, I'm like, no, I take the meat and cook it up and love bear meat and explain that. And there was like a group of six or seven people that were like, I didn't know that, you know, I didn't know that even happened. And we're just, again, just ignorant to it and didn't understand that that's how that went. And that was just a, you know, a small example. If somehow, you know, you're able to talk to those people and be able to give that education, I think you would be able to sway a lot of that mid-level. But it definitely is difficult to, you know, I'm in an echo chamber for, you know, looking at it from a certain way. Everyone's kind of in their communities where they know about it. Oh, yeah. And I always think, I grew up in the middle of nowhere and everyone I knew hunted. So I didn't, you know, or fished or trapped or I didn't know any different. I didn't know there was a whole outside world until I started expanding. I'm like, what do you mean they don't agree with that? We had the first day of deer season off of school, works yeah. all, that was a holiday. It's like, that's just what it was. And I didn't know that there was this whole other world that are becoming even further and further removed from it.
If you'd walk up to somebody, and it'd be interesting to see how some of this signature gathering actually goes here in Colorado, because it talks about a hunting ban. Now, they might mislead somebody in the measure language, but when it comes to the title side of it, there's some restrictions that they can probably do or not do when it comes to messaging to say, do you want to sign this? We'd like you to sign this so we can get this on the ballot. I would say that the average person is going to have questions about what a ban. Why do we need a ban? How is that going to affect other populations, or how is it going to affect human recreation or people that live in those areas? I have to really say that I think there's a little bit of buyer's remorse, a little bit, not a lot, on this wolf introduction. People had a chance to turn around and do a ballot measure vote on that in 2020. They probably thought to some degree, oh, it'd be cool to hear wolves. I've been to Yellowstone and I'd like to hear some wolves. I'd like to see a wolf. I don't think anybody really wants to see wolves in the pack of 20 rip the guts out of a cow elk and rip the calf out of it. But they know that there's this cycle of attrition, natural balance in nature. But they also have seen over the course of the last 4 years, the problems that have been created from depredation issues before we even introduced wolves, because we had a few wolves come in over the state line from Wyoming, and they caused significant loss for one or two individuals that have been in the news repeatedly over and over and over about calf loss, about calf damage, about loss of livestock dogs, about harassment. And it's been in the news. Now, going back a month, Parks and Wildlife, per the original ballot objective, released wolves from Oregon that they brought into state per the requirement of the voters that voted on it in 2020. The toxicity, the volatility that is created on the landscape, because it's in the news. Parks and Wildlife is under the gun. The governor's cabinet is involved. The attorney general is making statements. The director of the Department of Natural Resources, they're all up against the gun at different levels. It's in the news.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
Most people that I've talked to in my line of work and on the landscape, some of which have admitted voting for wolves, said, "Oh, if I knew it was going to be like this, I wouldn't have checked that box. If I had to do it over again, I would not check that box." There again, not stupid, ignorant, but I think that they're waking up to think that once this gets on the ballot, if they get the signatures, will they make the same mistake that they said that they admitted to on the wolf deal? And the wolf deal was bringing something in, and this is taking something out. And I would like to say that we're looking at 10 to 15 wolves a year for the next 5 years, and then they're going to continue to propagate. But according to Parks and Wildlife scientists, we've already got around 5,000 mountain lions in the state of Colorado. If you don't harvest mountain lions starting in 2025, and you don't harvest mountain lions for the subsequent 5 years after that, you're going to have natural death, natural cycle of attrition, but that population of mountain lions is going to continue to grow. I would bet that people are going to be a lot more concerned 5 years from now, from 7,500 to 8,500 mountain lions on the landscape with no harvest, than they are, what they are going to be when you got 150 or 200 wolves. Because mountain lions have to eat. Wolves have to eat. But when you have 5 or 6 or 8,000 of something versus 150 or 200, it's going to cause collateral damage on both sides of ungulate populations and maybe human interaction, depending on how far it goes. But when you got bears on one side that we've already restricted the harvest 25 years or 30 years ago, you got wolves with no harvest because they're an endangered species, and then you got mountain lions that the voters turn around and take out of the equation. What happens to our deer and elk populations? What happens to our other game populations? What happens to the livestock industry? What happens to the recreational aspect of things where people want to drive a snowmobile in the wintertime, or if they want to turn around and go skiing on a ski slope, or if they want to hike and camp on the edge of Rocky Mountain National Park, where wolves have now taken up occupancy? No logging, no grazing, no outdoor recreation. I think people are waking up to look at all the repercussions and ramifications of one bad decision, and then maybe multiplying that to where if other bad decisions were allowed to happen, where we would be 5 or 10 years down the road.
So with the wolf decision specifically, and really for any of these decisions, so do you think a lot of the as far as them checking the boxes was from the ignorance? And then two, do you think that it was obviously portrayed in a way to try to make them check that box as far as yes? And why does the governor's office, I know they don't like hunting, but do you think that their goal is to reduce the deer and elk populations to a point where they can't, it's not where that now they're like, I don't think we should be able to hunt them because there's not large enough numbers? Or what do you think that goal is with that?
It's a guesstimation in my mind, but I watched enough of this crap go on over the course of the last 10 or 15 years, and it's even before that, but since I got intimately involved. And I really, really believe that pedestalizing predators. Well, first, let me back up. I believe all wildlife should be managed in some capacity. Now, maybe there's some species like snails that don't need to be, unless they're like zebra mussels that have to be. All wildlife with human interaction involved should be managed in some capacity. That being said, I honestly believe that pedestalizing predators creates less of an opportunity for hunters because predators have to eat 365 days out of the year. Sportsmen and women get a license for 6 or 8 weeks for different seasons, but most seasons last 5 days or 7 days. If you want to hunt something other, another species, then you get another license somewhere else for another 5 or 7 days. It's not like most of the time we have 6 or 7 weeks out of a season that somebody can go turn around and harvest and then harvest and harvest again. Wolves and mountain lions and bears and bobcats and coyotes and all that stuff can. The collateral damage of that is then you got to feed the eagles and you got to feed the owls and the hawks and the ravens and the crows and all the other stuff that comes in to eat that stuff. I think the more predators you have on the landscape that are unchecked, unbalanced, no management, the less ungulate populations you're going to eventually have, and I'm not talking 30 years from now, the less ungulate populations you have, the less hunters that you need to manage those wildlife species, the ungulate species, the small game species, the less hunters you have, the less dollars because the less licenses. And I really think that that's the ultimate goal, is to turn around and take people off of the landscape. Look at the stuff under the Obama administration with the 30 by 30 program. And now under Biden, it's 50 by 50. That's 50% of all lands in conservation by 2050. It was 30% by 2030. They just keep up in the game. When you get done with this, is it going to be 70% by 2070? Is it going to be 80% by 2080? I mean, here in the state house, in the legislature, hear tale that we have legislators that are talking about running legislation this year, which we are intimately involved in, to turn around and ban hunting on state land. Now, national forests and stuff are not state land, but state land is owned by the people of the state of Colorado. And the wildlife and natural resources on that should be allowed to be, have access by the people and the visitors of the state of Colorado per the state constitution, per the funding mechanisms that are out there. I'm not giving you conspiracy theories. I'm giving you facts. These are ideologies from individuals to turn around and disrupt what we have under the North American model, science-based management, and the components that have been established over the last 125 years. And you take a little piece here and a little piece there and a little piece here and a little piece there. And it's not all about hunting. They don't need to turn around and make it all about hunting. They can make it about agriculture. They can make it about grazing rights on federal land or on state land. They can utilize it as far as recreation, endangered species and plants, invertebrates, pollinators, everything that they do to manage and micromanage the hell out of what they can degrades and erodes every single aspect of conservation and agriculture production, which turns into consumptive use. And it's a phrase that you see often where they turn around and say, there is no number acceptable except for zero. Zero. It's not 10, it's not 50, it's not 100, it's zero. And they talk about that for the agriculture industry. They talk about that from the water industry. And they talk about that from the conservation, hunting, and angling industry. And people need to realize when they talk about taking the low-hanging fruit, the trappers and the lion hunters, maybe the archery hunters, they take the low-hanging fruit off the lowest branches, chop those branches off, then they turn around and chop the tree down, then they go into the forest to take the rest of it. The other avocations that we talk about is the forest. They don't want to clear cut anything. They don't want to burn anything unless it's what we have amongst our community.
No, that makes a whole lot of sense. Like you said, it's not what you're putting out there is not a conspiracy. You have the facts to back it up and be able to explain that and show it. And it's true. And because when you think about it, it makes no sense otherwise. When you look at the science and you look at the facts, it just doesn't. It doesn't make sense from somebody that looks at that and says, "How is this good as far as what they're doing? How is what we're doing and our basis behind it? How is that incorrect for managing wildlife?" And that, to me, I guess it just blows my mind, but obviously we're still in those shoes. And again, I'm super thankful that we have people like you and CRWM to be able to go and fight that. But one thing I will ask, so for someone like myself or anybody else that's out there, what are some things that the general public can do to be able to help out with this?
Well, I haven't done a very good job over the last 4 months, even though money's been coming in fairly expeditiously. I've been getting the message out, but I need to start pleading with people and say, we need funds. We need funds to be able to defeat a juggernaut of an enemy. These organizations that were recently created here in Colorado, Cats Aren't Trophies, going under the coattails of Wild Earth Guardians, the Humane Society of the United States, Defenders of Wildlife, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, the Puma Project, Project Coyote, you name it. I mean, there's 60, 80, 100, 200 organizations that are pooling their funds. We are a small grassroots organization that we are building a coalition. We've got support from the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Safari Club International, Muley Fanatics. We're working on multiple other individuals and groups to figure out a way to create a funding mechanism, not just for Colorado. When we win here, we want to be able to turn around and prop something up in another state, in the West, throughout the country. We've already talked to industry leaders, and they're all on board. We've been taxing ourselves since 1937 with Pittman Robertson and 1953 with Dingell Johnson. There's a component out there that we can figure out a way to weaponize our mechanism that we've created from a historical and traditional perspective. But to start that, to kick these bastards back to the curb, like what I often say, we need funds. If people can spare $20 or $50 or $100, and I got to tell you, there's nothing more exciting to see somebody that you've never talked to before, Bo. The wife goes and checks the post office box for the organization, and our accountant and CPA is looking at the funds coming in on the website, and you'll have $4,000 one day and then a $10,000 check. and then a $15,000 day and a $5,000 check. These are things from people that are around the country that are kicking money in. And I said this in another podcast, and I think it was with Charles, with Howl for Wildlife. We had a guy from somewhere down in southern Florida, latter part of December, wrote a handwritten cursive note. Most people can't read cursive anymore, let alone write cursive. But a handwritten cursive note, he's an alligator hunter. He sent a check for $250. He said, I've had to fight these bastards in Louisiana and Florida most of my life. I'm never going to hunt Colorado. I just want to help because I saw your message and I see what you're doing. And I hope that there's somebody here to do what you're doing when they come for my damn gators again. This is the movement that I think that we could create nationally. This is a Colorado-centric issue right now for this November. But it's not just for this November everywhere else. There's other things going on in Washington. There's other things going on in Oregon. There's other things going on in New Mexico. There's other things going on in eastern states. We want to be the center of attention right now because we think that we can create enough enthusiasm to make sure that they don't win here, that they don't come back here. And if we built this playbook that we keep talking about to where when they go to New Mexico next year or Texas or Missouri or wherever they want to go, we've propped up this structure, this mechanism, this conduit that we can say, look, we can go to the industry, we can go to the organizations, we can go to the legislature, we can go to the sportsmen's foundations and the Congressional Sportsmen and Sportsmen's Alliance and say, what we created worked. And it worked because all of you participated. You were on a winning team. Now let's turn around and build a winning league, a winning field. And we honestly believe that that's something that we can not just weaponize and mechanize here. That's not to get rid of any organization that I talk about. I want to clarify that. That's making sure that all of those other organizations are underneath the same umbrella in the same tent in that same building to where when we see those bastards coming with picket signs or funding or ballot initiatives or citizens' petitions or legislative issues, that we all turn around and go, now we're going to help New Mexico. Now we're going to help Washington. As opposed to sitting there watching and going, what's happening in every state? Yeah, well, it's not happening here. I don't have to worry about that. Well, they get rid of every other state. It's going to happen there. It's going to happen in your hometown. We have to figure out a way to weaponize that. And the only way we could do that here was with a giant victory in Colorado. But we need funds. We're talking $3 to $5 million to be able to be combative against the enemy. But with that, we could be successful. We could be victorious. And we can do what we started out to do. And if you saw what we've done in the last 4 months by going through the title board, the Supreme Court, and giving them the best fight that we could possibly give them that they never thought that they were going to get, we are winning now. And we're going to win in November. We just want everybody to be part of that winning team. So first and foremost, money. I don't ask for money first normally. But right now I'm asking for money. And then I'd say, educate yourselves, educate your peers, educate your coworkers, your congregation, your family, your neighbors about the importance of wildlife management, science-based wildlife management, about conservation efforts that you know about your state. Maybe if you live in Colorado, it's about what is going wrong here and maybe what you know that's right. But if you're in Virginia, talk about what's going on in Virginia. But then reference what's going on in Washington right now and what's going on in Colorado right now and what they're having to deal with in New Mexico through the state legislature right now. There's tons of things that we can capitalize on our successes, but we have done a piss poor job. And I say this tongue in cheek from the organizations that we deal with to talk to that middle of the road general public. And we need to be able to do that succinctly, consistently, persistently, and professionally. With logic, reason, and facts. We don't need to be talking to our own membership. We need to make sure that our own memberships unite underneath that one umbrella. And then we have to figure out how to talk to the general public, and we can only do that collectively.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yeah.
That's no, a lot I agree. Of soapbox speech.
No, and I think and that the one thing that I hear from people a lot is, you know, there are so many organizations and they're doing all these things, but I truly think that anyone can go and find $20, $50, $100, whatever to be able to donate to this. And one thing that I want to say and something that I think is pretty cool that Spartan Forge is offering to give a free premium membership with anybody that donates $20 or more to CRWM through the month of February. And if you already have a membership, they'll extend it. So that's a really cool opportunity that they're jumping in from a company and being able to do. And I will say too, from my side, so anybody that's listening, I sell apparel on my website and I'll donate 3% of sales from the whole first quarter of the year to CRWM and send it there in the month of April after we get through all the sales time there. So I'll add a little bit on top of it.
Yeah, that's badass. And I can't express my gratitude enough to show the generosity that guys like you or Josh Smith with Montana Knife Company he might come up with Montana Wife at some point in time too, as successful as he is on the knife side of it. But I tell you what, you know, when you walk up to an industry leader at SHOT Show or Sheep Show, and you know that you've got a little bit of street cred, a little bit, not much. Sloan Brown has helped a lot with that. I give him a lot of credit. But you know, you walk up and they say, "We are proud to be a supporter and a sponsor of your efforts because we see value in that to our customer. We want to help support that." And then somebody contacts you through email and says, "We need to sit down and have a conversation because my marketing and conservation people need to hear your spiel about why we should contribute." This is not us going door to door. We're not trying to sell a product. This is about everybody coming to us. And what you just offered there is not only remarkable, but it's admirable, because I think, honestly, that if we could do this on a large, grand scale, when we're done and over with it in here in Colorado for this go around, that we can actually prop up something that the antis go, "Where are we going to go next? Well, we don't want to go there. Where are we going to go over here? Well, we don't want to deal with them guys. They're going to pick the weakest link." And right now we are all weak links in some capacity, but we're building strength in numbers. We don't have to be the weak link. We have the most admirable foundation of wildlife management in the world. We should prop it up. We should stand behind it. And we should make sure that they have no questions of who they're dealing with and what they're doing in any way, shape, or form. We are the baddest sumbitches on the planet when it comes to sportsmen and women in the United States and Canada. And there's nothing that can stop us if we keep moving the direction that we're moving. But we can't just roll over and let things, you know, disappear. Industry leaders, like what you're talking about, organization leaders, what I was referencing, individuals, businesses, just people on the ground, the guy with the gator deal down in Florida. This is stuff that doesn't happen overnight. But I can tell you the enthusiasm that I see on the landscape is not dissenting. It's not negative. It's not a Nancy naysayer. It's, what do we do to help you win so we don't have to deal with this ourselves? And if we do, we have the playbook to make sure that we don't.
Yeah. And Dan, I will say, like, one thing that I think helps is your amount of enthusiasm and the way to be able to share those things in a way that's intelligent but also consumable is super helpful. And also it's impressive, because I know just from, as we were trying to schedule this, how many things you're going to, you know, from meetings, from, you know, doing other things in the media and these shows and trying to, and you're putting everything in it, and that can, you know, beat a guy down from doing that, but you still talk with the amount of enthusiasm and everything that you do. And I think that just shows how important it is to you and as it should be to everybody else too. But I think that helps to be able to get behind and be able to do that. And I definitely hope that everyone heads over to SaveTheHuntColorado.com to be able to send whatever donation they have there and educate yourself. You have a bunch of stuff on there. There's, like you said, the Initiative 91 and what was 101 on there, and some of the information, your initiatives behind what you guys are doing. And yeah, I think it's incredible. So I'd like to be able to help in any way that I can to support it.
No, I appreciate that, Bo, and I appreciate the continued outreach that you've given and others in your industry. I do want to mention that, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not a social media guru, but it's been explained to me about how we can get that message out appropriately and efficiently and effectively and quickly. So, you know, the Facebook stuff that we got for the Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management and the Instagram, C.R.W.M, C-R-W-M, that we've been able to get information out very expeditiously. And you can't do that in news prep. It's hard to do it maybe even on a podcast. When you do a newsreel for a television show, it's often a one-off unless somebody saw it and they want to go back to it. It's not there in perpetuity. It's not there forever. The social media side of stuff is something where somebody can say, you need to go see this. And we're watching viewership increase over a week or two or 3 week period. You can't do that with very much other media out there at all. I think that's another reason why we're building up such a level of support. If you got a minute, I'd like to tell you a funny story that I thought was that resonates with this landscape. But I was flying from Las Vegas to Reno, going to Sheep Show, 11 o'clock flight, little gal on the side, light plane. We talked, had a conversation. She offered to give me a ride to the hotel, and I offered not to take it. And she said, if I didn't want to give it, I wouldn't offer it. And I thought, okay, well, you know, that's nice. And we get to Reno, it's 11 o'clock at night, and all the Tahoe people are going in there, and the, you know, airport's packed. And we walk past, you know, the luggage area, we get our bags and stuff. And she called her boyfriend, said that we're going to take this guy to the hotel. It's on our way home. And so we get to the location and where his truck was parked out in front. And she mentioned his name, mentioned my name, and she, you know, introduced us. And he looks and he goes, hey, you're the guy on Instagram. And she says, this is the guy? And he goes, yeah, this is the guy that's been talking. And I thought, you know, it's amazing to me that if we can have that sort of connectivity on the landscape amongst like-minded people, why can't we build up an effort and a coalition, not just when we need it, but just so we always have it. And it's so it's always there, that we have the connections with these organizations and through the states and through the accounts that have been built up and through this plan of action. It's rules of engagement that we create out of need, but it's always going to be there. Now they can be modified and adapted, but it's always going to be there. Right now, a lot of the times when these things happen, everybody looks around at everybody else and says, who's going to do what? How are we going to do this? I don't think we should do that anymore. I think we should turn around and act like that we're going to win the Super Bowl and that we got 2 minutes left and we have all the timeouts. Whether we're 6 points down or 6 points up, we're going to go into the field and we're going to beat the hell out of them and we're going to turn around and take our trophy back. And I think the North American model of wildlife conservation is the trophy. And I think that we hold on to it and we don't let it go. And we make sure that nobody else can turn around and bastardize it. And we continually pedestalize it to where we don't have to keep doing this crap for the next 100 years.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think, and first of all, it's a funny story as far as being on the plane and, you know, and I guess I wouldn't have thought of, but I guess it's for, you know, the event there, but Reno, I just wouldn't have thought that that's, you know, the type of person you would have ran into.
No, it was kind of an eye-opening, humbling experience for me that I was like, huh, who'd have figured?
Yeah. Well, Dan, I appreciate you taking your time. I know you got to run here in about 30 minutes to another meeting that you have, but I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that. And again, everyone can find out everything that Dan's doing and CRWM at SaveTheHuntColorado.com. Follow on Instagram at C.R.W.M. Maybe too many dots, but you get what I'm saying. And then on Facebook, Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management. So again, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it a bunch, Bo. And maybe as we move through the process on this, we can pop in at some point, give a 15 or 30 minute update as we move forward, because this is a changing landscape. It's been changing significantly since October. It's going to continually work through the process, but that way we can keep everybody apprised. But this is something that everybody's got skin in the game on, and we just want to make sure that they have an opportunity to have skin in the game 5 and 10 and 15 years down the road.
Yeah, no, absolutely anytime. I'll obviously be keeping an eye on it, but feel free to reach out anytime you have a message that you want to get out.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.